animation allows you to kind of like go off into like dream worlds and really explore that musically. So I think sometimes there's a little more creative opportunity.
People in animation often say like, oh, score it like a live action, just meaning, you know, don't play every little joke.
Hello, everyone. Today on the We Need to Talk About Oscar podcast, I'm joined by Orion and the Dark composers, Kevin Lex and Robert Leidecker. Hi, Kevin and Bob. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Good. How are you?
Oh, good. Oh, good. Thank you. We usually start our interviews by asking our guests about their core memories that made them fall in love with films. Do you have a moment or a time in your life which you can recall and attribute this feeling to?
Sure. Yeah. I recall kind of like the late 80s being kind of a time of kind of sweeping scores, such as like Willow and some of these early James Horner movies, Star Trek, and really when I was getting into orchestral music as well. So it was a nice combination and just kind of seeing that dramatic collaboration between filmmakers and composer. And I was just kind of enamored with the beauty of the scores and just how much you could emotionally connect with them and the storytelling and all that. So I think that was kind of like a pretty pivotal time for myself.
Yeah, for me, two of my earliest film memories are The Little Mermaid in theaters. I think I went like three times. And I remember like at the end standing up and applauding. But I think actually kind of generic, but a big one for me is when I was four, my library in their basement had a projector and they projected Star Wars, the first movie, and I sat there like in the front row. So I saw it on a big screen, even though it was, yeah, in the 80s after it was released and stuff. And I was just like, wow, what was that? It was really cool. And then later I got a book about the art of Star Wars. And I think that made me realize that I could like create that kind of thing as a career. So that was exciting for me.
And how did you two get into composing for films or TV shows?
For me, I started just kind of composing by accident because my family had a computer that had a MIDI program on it. And I just started experimenting with it and found to love it. And then film was kind of a good way to be a composer. But also, you know, like I said, I was interested in film and art to begin with. So that came first and then music came and then it kind of circled and married later on.
Yeah. In my high school, they kind of had an unusual program where a music synthesis program where you could take a class and like MIDI sequencing, and even in like an early iteration of Pro Tools for like more consumer-based folk. And actually my teacher at the time of this, who's our jazz band teacher as well, he was able to remove all the audio assets so you could rescore a scene, you know, really well. And so he actually assigned each student in the class a scene. And I just remember kind of, you know, loving it and then kind of getting involved in like local community colleges and taking classes there and then eventually pursuing in college at USC. And that's actually where I met Bob because we did our undergrad and graduate studies together.
Can you give me a little bit of an insight on first the general consensus on joint composing and how your perceptions were formed through experiencing it?
Good question.
Yeah. So like we basically you're curious what our opinion is of joint composing and why we think that.
Yeah. And then we can get more into how you two work together, the process and all things around that.
Yeah, it's a good question. Probably every joint composing experience is different. Like I've been in bands growing up where we kind of wrote music together, but that's like totally different then. And then I've worked for other composers who are much more established and wrote music for them or like co-composed. And then with Kevin, it's like, I feel like this experience is like we're the most kind of equal in terms of our experience, our skill set. So I don't know, there are pros and cons, you know, it's like definitely a lot less pressure, like going to a meeting and interviewing and you have your friend there. It's great to have someone else's perspective, like musical ideas you wouldn't have.
Yeah, I think as Bob mentioned, we both had kind of collaborative experiences prior to working in this fashion together, both like in bands. And then I also had produced with a couple close friends for a number of years, like hip hop and pop music. And so I was pretty comfortable to a degree. And so it was kind of a natural inclination. I do enjoy like the collaborative thing, even though composition can be kind of there's solitude involved, which is good, you know, but I think it's kind of nice to, Bob mentioned, open up the ideas and share those to for constructive feedback, and then go into meetings and kind of bring ideas to the director and kind of discuss it amongst yourselves. So yeah, my view of collaboration and in a joint composition is, you know, I think you have to respect each other's boundaries and kind of where they need time to, you know, kind of simmer on something creatively. But, you know, it's a very positive thing because you can unite forces and I think oftentimes create a better whole than maybe individual efforts.
Yeah, I think as humans, like, we kind of evolved to be team players. And that's why we've been successful as a species. So I feel like we're trying to capitalize on that in a way.
Yeah.
And through this process, do you rather share different parts of it or divide the different parts of it?
Yeah, we kind of go through initially and kind of appraise the film and talk about maybe what's the best division, developing themes, and then kind of identifying who's going to take what kind of motives. There's still a lot of cross-pollination that occurs, of course, and then trying to be as equitable as possible. Like if someone has a lot of action music, then you might consider, because that tends to be a little more involved writing, not all the time, but this is more programming typically, that you might be more mindful of someone who did a lot of that, that you might take a bit more minutes of, like, if it's a little more dramatic or just kind of like walk and talk music, so to speak. So yeah, and Bob and I are still developing because we've only worked on one prior project, Kung Fu Panda to Orion. So it's still evolving, but I think we've, so far, it's a pretty well tuned machine.
Something that has always preoccupied me, basically regarding all different departments through filmmaking, but especially in composing, is the switch or difference between animation versus live action on a style level and regarding the process. Is there any difference in the workflow or even the point you come on board, or maybe even something we wouldn't generally think of?
Yeah, I mean, one difference with live action, you're seeing the actors performing and everything's kind of finished visually. With animation, we often have rough animation, so there's like sometimes no color or, you know, things that would inform creative decisions. I mean, there's always differences, like every film is different, you know, but I think sometimes with animation, there's a little more, since it's not as realistic, there's a little more room to kind of be like more dramatic and more sweeping with the music. We don't have to stay out of the way as quite as much.
Yeah, even though you've read a script, but you might not know if it's like day or night by the earlier, or, and then as it fills in, it becomes, you know, just more and more beautiful. I mean, live action kind of do that as they fill in some VFX, but animation in particular, if you're working kind of like on an unfinished project, and then once the lighting really improves and the final graphics come in, it's a pretty substantial change, or it can be, at least our experience so far with the DreamWorks projects.
And
I think as Bob also mentioned, I think it gives you a little more liberty at times, not to say live action can't go off on its own fantasy adventure, but, you know, while there's still a serious story, like in Orion the Dark, you don't want to play it cartoony, there's still opportunity. And I think animation allows you to kind of like go off into like dream world and really explore that musically. So I think sometimes there's a little more creative opportunity.
Now on to Orion and the Dark. Thematically, the storyline feels like a well-known one, but what makes it stand out from its peers, I would say, is how it can appeal to all ages, which is a goal of, I'd say, a big chunk of animation, but only a few can actually live up to that premise. I guess, first of all, kudos to the writer, Charlie Kaufman, for that. But what I'd like to get your thoughts on and ask you about is finding that middle ground and making something generation-spanning, even music-wise.
I mean, I think we just kind of listened to the director and listened to the story. So I don't know if we were thinking too much about making it appeal. We just kind of, you know, like Kevin said, we tried to make sure it wasn't too cartoony. People in animation often say like, oh, score it like a live action, just meaning, you know, don't play every little joke.
I mean, as you mentioned, I think the writing itself, the story kind of lent itself to appealing to a bunch of generations. And I think, yeah, and again, as Bob mentioned, as long as you, I mean, there were times that you can lean into the comedy, but as long as it wasn't, you know, still playing it from a dramatic point of view, because it's still, you know, a dramatic story. And I think just following that allows adults to feel more comfortable with kind of like that they're not watching a cartoon.
In Orion and the Dark, different feelings, states, and all these incomprehensible, or so we thought, things are given personalities like sleep, sweet dreams, insomnia, or even unexplained noises. And the musical elements play a major role in making this happen. How do you approach, or where do you even start in building these personalities through music?
Yeah, I think sometimes you consider what could be associated with those feelings. And sometimes that's what the director kind of conveys. The director in this case did oftentimes have musical references, but it wasn't like, I want this instrument. So for sleep, we incorporated like celeste, which is oftentimes, you know, like a bell-like thing. So, you know, a bell-like thing that's kind of associated with lullabies and sleeping. And then insomnia, you know, like electric guitar, a little more like driving. So we try to consider what would be musically kind of attached to those personalities in a more an emotional, dramatic point of view, and then, you know, compose for those.
Yeah, there are already sort of like tropes that exist, or like associations we've built up culturally, I think, that can be useful. One thing too, we thought about, well, so at the start of the film, when we're setting up Orion's world, it's mostly like real instruments. But then when we go into the fantasy world, we started incorporating more like synthesizers and like making things more spacey a little bit and how they were mixed. So there was also kind of a shift between the real world and the fantasy world in like a big picture sense, but not rigid. Yeah.
And the film centers around fears, struggles, and overcoming all the things in life. For many people, music is kind of a refuge, a safe place. And obviously, you too, as musicians, are, I believe, surrounded by music all your lives. So what's a piece of music that helped you get through hard times or motivated you to face your fears, for example?
Well, when you were asking that, I remembered being a sophomore in high school and having some difficult times, some things that were challenging. But I remember like one day bringing my CD player and putting on headphones, and I was listening to, there's one of my favorite records called Out Come the Wolves by a band called Rancid. And yeah, it just like made me feel great. Also, another band that would always make me happy as a kid was called the Aquabats. They're pretty like silly music. So. But there's many more examples.
Yeah, I guess it's a great question. I think I have a pretty vivid memory, actually, at USC, kind of listening to more and more French music. You know, I was listening to a lot of Debussy at the time, and I remember just walking around campus, which you're familiar, I'm sure Bob is, with Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. And I just remember being kind of so swept up in it and just kind of being an encouraging piece of music to kind of, you know, get adjusted to this big transition in life. And I just kind of have a pretty like salient memory of that. And always been there, U2, since a youngin, but they're kind of a go-to band for their kind of lyrical, emotional lyrics and, you know, and all that. So
what about for you? Can I ask?
Well, I would say mostly Linkin Park.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Castle of Glass or New Divide, those two. That's it. A little bit of Green Day and
yeah. It's really cool how music made it medicine for us.
No deep cuts really, but
yeah, sure.
It worked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's great music.
No, it's wonderful.
And a bit sticking with the theme, it's a kind of an epilogue, a final question. Do you ever think about the effect your music might have on others? How something that you worked on can actually be where someone finds their comfort, like the bands or tracks we just listed?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think about that as I'm making the music, but I think about it all the time in a way, because I've always wanted to do something positive with my life. And I love making music, and I've tried to tell myself, well, hopefully this can be something positive, and maybe one day, you know, someone will hear something I did and it'll be meaningful for them. So yeah, not because of myself, but just because I want to help other people. I think about that.
Yeah. It's kind of a fun experience when you've finished a film in particular, or it also like, even when you're scoring and you get into an emotional state, and whether or not other people share that. But I do think when you approach something with genuine sense, that I think people detect that, whether on a subconscious level or not. And I think they oftentimes or can connect, you know, and it's kind of maybe sometimes what you're responding to emotionally when you're composing a film is maybe in a shared experience of like, whether that might be deeply personal for you, but maybe someone might be able to touch upon that in their own way as well. But also it's kind of cool, you know, we got to see Orion in the Dark in the theater a couple times prior to it releasing on Netflix. And there was definitely like a pretty strong emotional response, especially from Bob's. but she's super cute. But also like, you know, I've scored some horror movies and there is kind of a cool thing when you're in a theater and you're like observing people kind of like scared. And, you know, whether they're feeding that to the music or not, but it is kind of cool to be part of that like experience that they're this thrilling, fearful, or, you know, in the Ryan's case, emotional, joyful is, you know, at times very directly due to you, or at least one of your role, or a little more like playing a back role, but still part of the scene.
Especially that nowadays motion picture soundtracks are getting embraced more and more, thankfully.
Precisely, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Bob, Kev, thank you so much for taking the time and giving us this little behind the scenes look at the music of Orion and the Dark.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you. It was great talking to you. Great questions.
And thank you.
Yeah. Nice to connect.